Hello, and thank you for joining us for today's Applicant Update webinar. I'm Nicole Davenport, new GTLD Communications Manager for ICANN. Before we begin our discussion, I'd like to cover a few things. This webinar is being recorded. Recordings and supporting materials will be published on the new GTLD microsite. The running time of the webinar is 90 minutes. We'll start with a presentation and end with a question and answer session. You can ask a question via phone or in the Adobe Connect questions and comments pod. Phone questions will be addressed first, followed by questions submitted online. Dial-in numbers can be found on the webinar page of the microsite at http://newgtlds.icann.org/webinars. The conference ID is Applicant Update Webinar. To enter the phone queue, dial *1. To exit the queue, dial *2. Please make sure your phone is not on speaker when you ask a question. Now I'd like to turn it over to Christine Ouellette, Vice President, GTLD Operations.
Thanks, Nicole. Good afternoon, everybody, or good evening to those of you, or good morning to Asia, I suppose. We've got a brief update on the new GTLD program today. Many of you were in Buenos Aires, based on the list I see of who's logged into Adobe, so some of this material we have presented recently in Buenos Aires. We have attempted to limit today's presentation to providing you with new information. So much information is being published on a weekly basis out on the new GTLD microsite. We're trying to keep the presentation brief to 30 minutes or less. So we will attempt to do that today. I'm going to cover an update on the general application pipeline and progress of the various stages of the program, followed by Trang will cover evaluation and contracting processes. Christina will speak to objections and dispute resolution as well as GAC advice. Here you see Russ will be covering the couple of areas, auctions, as well as pre-delegation testing and delegation. Karen will speak to Trademark Clearinghouse, and certainly last but not least, Francisco will cover name collision. So as of today, there are 35 delegated new GTLDs. You see them listed there. Congratulations to all of those applicants. We've got several sunrises going, and in just the next few days, the first claims period will also begin. So continued steady progress towards the transition to delegation here. In terms of the overall program pipeline, you see here in blue really the pipeline of applications. As we started with 1,930, the active applications that are in evaluation, down to the 978 applicants that have been invited to contracting, 201 contracts signed as of last week, down to the 35 delegated. The one thing of note here that we discuss internally, we've invited 978 applications into contracting, but we've only received 336 contracting responses. So we're still right around a third of all applicants responding to those invites. We're anticipating that the soon finalization of the brand registry agreement may make some applicants more interested in moving towards contracting as we get into the new calendar year. On the bottom right, you'll see a breakdown of the 816 applications that are not yet eligible for contracting. Over 650 in contention, 396 have GAC advice, 83 still left with objections, etc. So steady progress is being made on a weekly basis. We're continuing to contract on a weekly basis, scheduling pre-delegation testing appointments, and then transitioning applications into delegation. So I will now turn it over to Trang to talk about evaluation and contracting.
Thank you, Christine. Slides are not exactly displaying all of the numbers on that first bar there, but of the 1,930 applications that were originally submitted, there are currently 1,794 active applications. As of last Friday, we have 132 applications that have been withdrawn and 4 applications not approved. Of the 1,794 active applications, the majority have passed initial evaluation. We do have 2 that are still left in initial evaluation, and we're continuing to work diligently with the applicants to move those applications forward. 35 applications were eligible for extended evaluation, and we're also making steady progress on the extended evaluation front as well, releasing extended evaluation results for 21 applications, and then we have about 17 applications that are still left. No, I didn't do my math right. 14 applications are still left in extended evaluation in various statuses that you can see there. Next, please. A quick update on contracting. As you can see here, 978 applicants have been invited to contracting, as Christine had mentioned. Of that number, 336 have responded to the contracting invite. And as of last Friday, we've sent out 253 contracts for signature and have executed 201 contracts. So we're continuing to make good progress on this front. And then also one additional update on contracting. During the Buenos Aires meeting, I had mentioned that we are working on deploying a new CIR form, and that is still on track to be deployed shortly after the new year, and we'll provide applicants with some communications around the changes to the new form, but the goal of the new form is to provide a more user-friendly interface and a way to submit answers to the CIR, so looking forward to rolling that out after the new year. Now I am going to hand it off to Christina to cover objections and GAC advice.
Thanks, Trang. Good afternoon, everyone. As we can see from the statistics, as of this week, we have 70 objections that are still in progress. The applicant has prevailed in 131 cases, and the objector has prevailed in 20. We've received some questions about what happens when an objector prevails in an objection if the affected application is not withdrawn. We just want to provide a little additional information about that. The applicant guidebook is clear about the intent to provide applicants with the opportunity to withdraw their applications. After an objection determination has been finalized, applicants may pursue all accountability mechanisms as described in the ICANN bylaws. At this time, we are not terminating applications. However, we intend to update the application statuses and contention sets to reflect the outcomes of objections in due course. Next slide, please. As displayed in the last slide, many of the community and limited public interest dispute resolution proceedings are still in progress. While we anticipate that the majority of them will have determinations published by the end of January, we'd like to share some additional information around the ICC's processes with you. The ICC's procedures used to administer the new GTLD objections are established procedures that it uses for arbitration. These procedures include an extensive review process for all cases it administers. Once an expert panelist provides the ICC with a determination, the determination is reviewed by ICC staff and leadership to ensure clarity and accuracy of facts cited in the determination based on the information that was submitted by the parties. It's important to note that the ICC does not review the merits of the determination, pass judgment on the determination, or influence the determination. ICANN is working with the ICC to ensure that all parties receive a high level of service. Please direct any case-specific inquiries to the email address that we have displayed on this slide. Additionally, we're discussing the possibility of a webinar in January where ICC staff would be available to share additional information. Next slide, please, for the GAC advice update. We just have a short update for GAC advice today. We recently began the 21-day window for applicants to provide responses to GAC advice from the Buenos Aires Communique. applicant should have received an email communication from customer service indicating this. If you'd like to submit a response for the new GTLD program committee's consideration, please submit a response via the customer service portal by the 6th of January. We extended the typical 21-day window by a few days in order to account for the holiday season. Now I'll hand it over to Russ to discuss auctions.
Thanks, Christina. So before I dive into auctions, I did want to touch on CPE real quick. There's no real update since Buenos Aires regarding CPE. The progress statistics are updated on the web, so if there's questions about those, we can address them. But no real updates on CPE since Buenos Aires. Now shifting gears over to auctions, probably the biggest news since Buenos Aires yesterday, we posted the auction items for public comment. In that public comment period, we posted the auction rules, as well as a bidder agreement, a draft schedule, and some forms that we'll use, the bidders will use to get started in the process. The opening date is today, December 17th, and it's a 28-21 comment period, so the closing date will be February 4th. We're looking for all kinds of feedback, but especially focused on the schedule and pace of auctions, the eligibility factors. Based on some of the feedback we've received so far, there was discussion about when SET would be eligible for auction related to name collisions, so we tried to address that in the rules. And duration and rounds, duration of the rounds and recesses, and again, that was an item we got feedback on and have adjusted since the preliminary publication. So we're still targeting for mid to late February intent to auction notifications. The first of those should go out in the mid to late February timeframe, and working towards probably a mid to late April date as the first auctions. Next topic, move over to pre-delegation testing. So as we talked about in Buenos Aires, we're working on a weekly routine now. So invitations are going out right after contracts are signed, either Thursday nights or Friday mornings. We're doing our scheduling on Tuesdays, and then results are being distributed on Thursdays. And then this will feed well into the transition to delegation process, which I'll talk about next. From a statistics standpoint, moving along pretty well. We have 108 results distributed so far. All of them have passed so far. And we'll have another 20 or so to release this week. You see a note down there under product improvements. We're working on updates to the test instructions and a couple of the test cases. This delayed a little bit. We were hoping to do it in December, but we're pushing it out to January to make sure we get it all right. We're sensitive to customers that are already engaged in PDT and have many applications going through the process, and we're trying to ensure that these changes don't affect the current test appointments and that people wouldn't have to adjust the data they're providing to PDT to continue processing. So we're working on optional changes and better clarifications in the test cases themselves to try and reduce follow-up questions that we're getting during the appointments. Next slide, move over to transition to delegation. This is the same process we showed in Buenos Aires. There's three key eligibility requirements to the transition to delegation process: passing pre-delegation testing, being eligible for the alternate path to delegation, and completion of registry onboarding step one. Once those three eligibility factors are complete, we will request a delegation point of contact and then issue a delegation token, where you'll then take the delegation token, initiate the delegation process with the IANA team in the RZM system. So again, this is another process we're working to a weekly cycle. We're requesting delegation points of contact on Tuesdays, and we're distributing delegation tokens on Thursdays. So we have some delegation tokens we're hoping to distribute on Thursday coming out. With that, I'll pass it over to Karen to talk about TMCH.
Thank you, Russ. Hello, everyone. I will go through a couple of updates in regard to the Trademark Clearinghouse and associated processes. The first slide has the statistics. The numbers you can see are continuing to grow in terms of the number of records in the database. We're just under 20,000. Also, we have registries and registrars continuing to get access and to pass integration testing. The big news is we have 31 Sunrises in progress now. Next slide. So the next two slides are addressing some areas where we've received a number of questions and to try to provide some clarity around those. So the first one is fees, specifically the pass-through fees that occur during Sunrise and claims. The pass-through is from the registry to ICANN to IBM. These are the fees that are provided for in the registry agreement. And during the Sunrise and claims periods, there are some additional fees that apply in besides the regular transactional fees that are provided for. So in regard to the pass-through fees, there is a startup fee of $5,000 per TLD. And then there's a transactional fee of 25 cents that applies during these periods. So during the Sunrise period, that fee applies to names that are registered during the Sunrise. During any limited registration period, which those periods are optional, but if there is one, the claim service is required to be offered during that period, and accordingly there's a transactional fee that applies to the names that are registered during that limited registration period. During the required minimum 90-day claims period, the transactional fee also applies to names that are registered during that period. It applies only to those names where a claims notice was actually presented to the registrant. And this applies to all of those periods. The fee is not, does not apply to requests that don't result in a registration. So the fees are always based on the names in the list of registered domain names. The Lorden file that is uploaded by the registry to the clearinghouse, that is what's used as the basis for charging the fees. Also of note, the fee is a one-time fee, so unlike the regular transactional fee, they're not in increments. So in the case, for example, where there's a two-year registration, there's not a multiplier. It's just the standard 25-cent fee. Next slide. The other set of questions that we've been receiving relate to what's called the NORN, or the Notice of Registered Name. So in the claims process, there are two notices that occur. The first, or that may occur, the first is the notice that is shown to a registrant of a domain name saying that the name you're trying to register matches some records in the clearinghouse. Do you wish to proceed? That notice is called the claims notice, and that is shown by the registrar to the potential registrant. The other notice is a notice from the clearinghouse to a rights holder that has records in the clearinghouse, and that is what's called the notice of registered name. That occurs once a name has actually been registered. It lets the rights holder know that the name matching the clearinghouse record has been registered. Many of the questions are from registries or registrars asking what their responsibility is in regard to this notice. There isn't any. There are no steps required here. That once the Lorden file is uploaded to the clearinghouse generates the appropriate notifications to the rights holders. Next slide. Finally, I'll talk a little bit about approved launch programs. So, In the registry agreement, the RPM requirements section does provide that registry operators can apply to ICANN to conduct a launch program that wouldn't otherwise be permitted under the registry agreement. So that process was posted in November. That link is the second link on the first link in the middle of the slide. And we have received some requests under that process, which we are engaging with the requesters to make sure we have complete information. We've also worked to document the factors that we use in the analysis in reviewing all of those requests. So we have developed documents
covering the review guidelines that are applied by ICANN when looking at requests for approved launch programs. So we have those ready to post pretty shortly, certainly by the end of the week. I will next turn it over to Francisco Arias for Named Collision. Thanks.
Thank you, Karen. Hello, everyone. So it's a brief update on Named Collision. As some of you may know, we published the alternate path to delegation reports on 17 November during the Buenos Aires meeting. This covers all the new ETLD applied for strings, but 25 that were found ineligible to be for the alternate path for delegation. After Buenos Aires, what we have done is we launched the Named Collision Information Center. The link is in the slide. We also published the guide to Named Collision Identification and Mitigation for IT professionals. This is the document that we hope will help solve the root cause of the Named Collision in those networks that are using private names that could collide with the new ETLDs. We also launched an outreach campaign to raise awareness about these issues, particularly directed to enterprises so they can affect changes in their network if they need to. The main material in this campaign is the guide that I mentioned before. We are working now on translating these materials, and we expect to have them in the other five UN languages by early next week. Finally, we are working on the Named Collision Occurrence Management Framework. This is the final piece of the solution to Named Collision. This will substitute eventually the SLD block list. We would like to invite everyone interested to participate in this discussion. The link to the mailing list where we hope to have the discussion is in the slide. That's it. Thank you.
Okay. So thanks, everybody. We're going to transition into the Q&A portion of the webinar now. I want to start by mentioning the numerous questions which we received in advance of the webinar. The vast majority of these questions the team endeavored to answer and address through the body of the presentation. So the vast majority of questions have already been answered through the slide deck. So we're not going to go back and repeat information in the Q&A format if the content and material has been delivered. However, there are a handful of questions which didn't quite fit into the presentation, so we're going to go through just a handful of questions before we go to the phone lines. So I'm going to start with Karen. I think, Karen, you had one question?
Yep, thank you, Christine. We had one question, which was, why is a Sunrise dispute resolution policy necessary for a start date Sunrise? What type of dispute could occur? So the answer to that is a Sunrise dispute may be about a registrant's eligibility to register a name or to register that name during the Sunrise period, so it's unrelated to what type of timing is used by the registry for the Sunrise.
Excellent. Thanks, Karen. Russ, I think you have one as well. Oh, two.
Yeah.
Okay.
Right. So this one's related to the transition to delegation process. We received a number of questions related to the pace of delegations. So just to reiterate, ICANN is monitoring and managing the pace of delegations to not exceed 1,000 delegations per year, as we established prior to the launch of the program. And this averages to about 20 per week, but it may fluctuate from week to week. And then the second question was related to timing and priority. So the question was, if all applicants in the queue have passed PDT, provided onboarding documentation, and have been approved for transition to delegation, and provided the delegation point of contact, what is the priority for delegation? Is the contract date, signing date, still the highest priority? So, as with other phases of the program, if eligible applications exceed capacity, applications will be processed in priority number order, but at this time we're able to process all of the eligible ones per week at this time.
So I'll just add on to that, Russ. So in terms of our program process for transitioning to delegation, we certainly are continuing to consider the priority number as we go through that transition process. But once the token is provided to the applicant, it's really based on the applicant's login to the IANA RZM system, and the IANA process is based on when they log into the system. It's not based on priority number. So just a little added clarification there. Okay. Francisco, I think you had one question.
Yes. Thank you, Christine. The question is if the SLDs listed in the alternate path to delegation are blocked, can delegations SLD delegations occur prior to the 120-day period after contracting? The answer is names cannot be delegated or activated under new ETLD until the end of the 120-day no-activation period. This period is independent of the SLD blocking measure found in the alternate path to delegation. The 120-day period is intended to protect against the internal name certificate issue, whereas the SLD blocking measure, it's to protect against any other type of collision. Thank you.
Thanks, Francisco. And Trang, oh, sorry, Christina, we've got a couple questions that you'll take.
Thanks, Christine. So the first question is about community objections, and the question is there a discovery and appeal mechanism for community objections where there have been procedural issues and material changes? So the answer is that the AGB does not provide for a community objection appeal mechanism. However, ICANN's accountability mechanisms, which are the Ombudsman Board's reconsideration and the independent review panel, are available to those parties that believe they have been treated unfairly or that they have been harmed, so long as they can otherwise satisfy the standing criteria for each of these mechanisms. We'd like to note that ICANN has determined that the reconsideration process can properly be invoked for challenges of the third-party DRSP's decisions as challenges of a staff action, where it can be stated that either the DRSP failed to follow the established policies or processes in reaching the decision, or that ICANN staff failed to follow its policies and processes in accepting the decision. The second question here is about GAC advice, and it's related to the first one. In relation to material changes, what happens with applicants with GAC Category 2 advice who have falsely stated that their current application is one of non-exclusive access, when in fact their application contains language pertaining to exclusive access? Will ICANN investigate such cases and require applicants to submit a change request to remedy their misleading response to GAC Category 2 advice to ensure that certain applications are not circumventing the process and ICANN resolutions? So ICANN solicited responses from applicants subjected to GAC Category 2 advice, and you know, I believe there were 186 solicited, and those applicants provided responses. As all applicants to the new GTLD program agreed to the TLD application terms and conditions in Module 6 of the applicant guidebook, all applicants agreed to the terms and conditions in Module 6 of the AGB. Those applicants that disclose that their applications say that the TLD will be operated as exclusive access, but that now they will not be operated that way, are being held pending a change request to make the application consistent with how they intend to operate the TLD. As a reminder, all successful applicants will enter into a registry agreement with ICANN and will be bound to the terms and conditions of the registry agreement, including Section D of Specification 11, which states, registry operator of a generic string TLD may not impose eligibility criteria for registering names in the TLD that limit registrations exclusively to a single person or entity and or that person or entity's affiliates.
Thanks, Christina. Anybody else here in the room? Questions? I think that's it. So if you submitted a question prior to the webinar and you don't feel that it's been addressed, feel free to get on the phone or enter your question into the chat. As at this point, we've tried to address all those questions, some of which we grouped together or paraphrased because we got multiple related questions on the same topic. So at this point, we're going to transition over to the phone. I think I'm told we've got two callers on the line. Oh, three. Wonderful.
Ladies and gentlemen, if you have a question, please press the star followed by the 1 on your touch-tone phone. If you would like to withdraw your question, please press the star followed by the 2. And if you are using speaker equipment, you will need to lift your handset before making your selection. Our first question comes from the line of Andrew Merriman with Top Level Design. Please go ahead.
Hi, everyone, and thanks. I've noticed that ICANN seems to be operating above its estimated time frames for all the onboarding steps from PDT to delegation, which, first of all, just as a comment, is great, and thank you all for your hard work over there on that. But it kind of just brings up two related questions to me. Are these quick turnarounds because you have yet to hit your operational capacity, is one. And two, if so, do you have a sense of when the more conservative estimates of these processes will become the norm, as in when you would kind of be hitting the operational capacity? Thanks.
Hi, Andrew. This is Russ. So I think for PDT, we're tracking pretty well to the advertised targets of around 6 weeks or so, and continuing to work to improve that. For transition to delegation, I think you are seeing it go a little smoother and faster than we anticipated. There's a lot of steps where the customer or the applicant or registry operator has to provide data back to ICANN and back to the IANA team, and then there's a few outside processes with NTIA and with VeriSign. So we're trying to be pretty conservative on those in our timeline that we showed in BA. Right now, things are going a little smoother, but I'd be a little cautious to overcommit anyone outside of ICANN staff.
Andrew, does that address the question?
Yeah, it does. I guess it was specific to the transition to delegation that was kind of most pronounced the difference in what you're doing and what you're publishing. I think the slides from Buenos Aires were even updated recently to reflect an even more conservative time frame. So I didn't know if that specifically related to any kind of internal look at operational capacity or anything on that front. If so, any clarification that would be helpful.
So at this point, we haven't reached an operational capacity on the transition to delegation process. We could hit some bottleneck, but at this point, the pace that we've seen applications coming out of pre-delegation testing, we haven't taxed that facet of it. But again, as Russ said, after we provide the applicant with a token to proceed and take to the RZM system, it's out of our program, the team's hands, and it's really in the applicant's hands and the work with IANA and the NTIA. So thanks so much for your question, Andrew.
Thank you.
Thank you. Our next question comes from the line of Amadou Abreu with CORE. Please go ahead.
Hello, good morning, everybody there in California. Some of the questions were already answered in your webinar. Thanks for that. But I have a couple of them. One is for Cristina Flores regarding the objections and ICC. And I heard everything you said, but do you have any timeline from them on when, you know, the 80 or 70-something could be released? Because some of them have been, you know, the expert has communicated to the parties that the decision was communicated to ICC 4 months ago, and it seems like a reasonable time to polish the final decision from draft to final, right? And the other one is, I don't know whether it's for Russ or Francisco, I guess more for Russ, is regarding the famous alternate path to delegation. In one of the TLDs, we got past we got signed last week. For only one of them, we got an email clarifying that it was this alternate path and that that party could choose either, you know, to take that alternate path or could decide to wait and solve the issues, and then, therefore, the DocuSign process will be stopped, but not for the other four of them. And my question is, what are the criteria for sending this mail alerting the parties that they can choose between the alternate path or the regular path or not?
So, Amadeo, thank you for the question. This is Christine. So, first question around ICC timing, and then we'll handle the alternate path item. So, in terms of timing on specific objections, if you have questions about if you're a party to an objection, either the applicant or the objector, ICC has invited you to contact them via their email address that Christina provided in the slide deck to get specific information. If you copy the new GTLD at ICANN.org email address as well, we will be happy to monitor those cases and have a case of our own to track. And then we'll also get updated. Then our customer service team would also get updated by the ICC when they have status. Generally, we're talking about objection determinations in continuing to come out in the next 2 to 3 months. There's a forecast, but they are unable to give us specific deadlines on each individual case. So it's really on a case-by-case basis, and it's the parties that have standing to interact with the ICC about that specifically. Like Christina said, during her presentation, we are working with the ICC to schedule a webinar for January so that we can get more of these questions out on the table and let all of you applicants and interested parties hear it directly from the ICC team. So that's topic one, Amadeo. Second question about the alternate path to delegation. Do we have a clarifying question for Amadeo?
Amadeo, this is Francisco. Actually, I'm not sure about the question. I think you're asking about the notifications regarding the alternate path for delegation.
Yes.
Would you mind clarifying?
Yes, because we received this email clarifying the two paths and saying what are the consequences of each one of them, but not for all the applications in the same week. So my question was whether there was a criteria for choosing some of them and informing them about the alternate path and not to others. Because most of them had been sent to alternate path without being asked, which we assume was the default.
Hi, Amadeo. It's Krista. So I think what you're referring to is we recently updated Spec 6 during the Buenos Aires meeting, and we posted all of the alternate path to delegation reports. There were a handful of registry agreements that were out for signature or had recently been signed. They're sort of in this in-between stage that needed to receive formal notification that the Spec 6 had been changed. And that notification, again, went to a handful of registry operators, talked about Spec 6, and then referred them to their alternate path to delegation report. So it kind of encompassed a few things, and I have a feeling that's probably what you're referring to. Does that sound familiar?
Yes, probably it's this one. So it was more related to just the modification of the specification than the alternate path itself, correct?
That's exactly right.
Okay, thanks for the clarification.
No problem. Thanks for the question.
And then finally, I just have a suggestion. I made that in writing, and I think it would be useful that we organize one day also webinars on the TLD agreement because we are getting lots of questions from our customers that, quite frankly, I have some doubts how to answer. So perhaps would be interesting that now that everyone has to turn to that to apply concrete answers to concrete clauses in the TLD being launched to have a webinar on questions and answers on the TLD agreement.
So, Amadeo, your suggestion is to have a specific session on the registry agreement?
Yes.
Okay. Krista Shake seems to understand what your suggestion is, so thank you. We'll take that suggestion.
Okay.
Do we have any other calls on the phone? Yes, one more. Thank you, Amadeo.
Thank you. Our next question comes from the line of Charles Gomez with VeriSign. Please go ahead.
Thanks, and let me first of all compliment the team on the good preparation for the webinar and the excellent way it's organized. I think it has been done very smoothly. I have three questions related to the Trademark Clearinghouse. Recently, Deloitte announced that they were going to extend the claims period indefinitely. So my first question in regard to that, was that approved by ICANN staff? The second question is, considering the fact that community process has led to a decision that the claims period should be 90 days with the option that applicants could extend that if they wanted to, how does the Deloitte action comport with that? And then last of all, is it correct to assume that what Deloitte has said they're going to do will not impact registries and registrars at all?
Excellent. Thank you, Chuck. Appreciate it. The team has certainly made efforts to continue to improve the format of the webinars to get as much information across in as brief a time as possible. So thank you for the questions on the Trademark Clearinghouse. I will let Karen Lentz address those.
Hi, Chuck. Thanks for the questions. So a couple of things. One, as background, our agreement with Deloitte for the verification service does provide that they can offer ancillary services subject to some caveats, one being approval by ICANN, one being that it has to be an opt-in service, so the rights holders would be opting in and choosing to have their marks available, their data available for this additional service. Another caveat being that that data has to be maintained in a separate database than the Trademark Clearinghouse database, and that's all in line with the SDI report that discussed ancillary services quite a bit. So the way of describing it in terms of extending the claims period indefinitely, I wouldn't say that's exactly what the service is, and I don't have the detailed spec in front of me, but the intention with announcing it was to, you know, signal that the Clearinghouse is intending to continue to build the services and the value that it's offering. So the service does not so much extend the claims period, which is still 90 days. No registry is required to do more than that. But the rights holder can opt in to continue receiving the second notification, the notification that goes as part of the claims process once a name gets registered. So the service does not require any additional steps from the registries or registrars, as we understand it. And if it had, we certainly, would have gone through a more extended consultation and consideration of it. So that is what we understand the service to be. Looking at my notes, if there's anything else.
Just a couple follow-ups, Karen.
Sure.
First, so then ICANN staff did approve this service. And secondly, if there's no obligation for registries or registrars to report any information in terms of registrations to the Trademark Clearinghouse, is it accurate to assume that Deloitte will be using the publicly available zone files to do that?
So, again, I don't have the details in front of me, but that's the intention, that there is no additional steps required of the registry or registrar. You know, they provide the list of registered domain names that they're required to provide during the 90-day claims. For the additional service, Deloitte is not intending to use that same process, but to get the data from other sources, one of which I believe could be the zone file, but I would want to be accurate to confirm exactly what the operational piece of that is.
And so ICANN staff did approve the service. One of the things you said was is that one of the conditions was that ICANN would have to approve services.
So, you know, we discussed this with them. I think we've indicated that, in principle, we have no, we would foresee no issue with approving it.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks, Chuck. And we have one more caller on the line.
The next question comes from the line of Christina Rochette with No Company. Please go ahead.
Hi. Thanks very much. Christine, I just was hoping I could circle back to the timing of the outstanding decisions on the community objections. It was my understanding or recollection that during the presentation itself, there was a reference to the fact that the vast majority of the decisions would be rendered and released by the end of January. But in a follow-up question, it sounded as if that timeline was then changed to the next 2 to 3 months, which is, you know, a pretty significant, at this point, difference. So I was hoping perhaps you could clarify that.
Thanks, Christina. So, again, there are 70-ish cases with the ICC in this state between the community and the limited public interest objections. Some of them have stays, some of or continuances, if you will. They're in very vastly different states. So that's why there is – it's difficult to speak with certainty about the exact process. It's we've got applicants and objectors, the parties who have requested stays, who continue to request stays and approve stays on an ongoing basis. So we're not a party to these objections. ICANN is not a party to these objections. So there are some cases in that situation. There are a variety of very different scenarios. That's why my suggestion is to for the parties involved in each individual case to contact the ICC with specific details. Yes, based on what we knew a month ago, what I personally knew a month ago, I expected the majority of the cases to be done this year and in January. After hearing a lot of information in Buenos Aires, we pursued that. It's difficult to talk generally because there are so many different and unique circumstances for each case. So we're getting questions in the chat about this as well. So that's exactly why we are planning to have a webinar next month.
Understood. I appreciate that. And if I could actually just make a follow-up observation that, you know, while I certainly understand why it would be suggested that affected parties should contact ICC directly, I hope ICANN will also appreciate that there's some concern that a party that does that is not necessarily helping the outcome of their objection, which is why I think it would be helpful if perhaps it could be agreed upon by ICC and ICANN that ICC would set for itself for those proceedings for which there are not stays and there are not continuances and that are in the scenario like Amadeo it described, namely, you know, the decision had been submitted by the panel a long time ago, that if it would be possible for ICC to set for itself, frankly, a hard and fast deadline and communicate what that would be to the parties. I think that would be very helpful and avoid a lot of uncertainty and frustration.
Thank you, Christina. I think the ICC will be able to speak to their specific procedures and what they're bound by, not just the rules through the guidebook, but also their own internal procedures that they're bound by. But thank you very much for that feedback, and we will pass that along.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you. Once again, ladies and gentlemen, if you have a question, please press the star followed by the 1 on your telephone keypad. And if you are using speaker equipment, you will need to lift your handset before making your selection. Our next question comes from the line of Donna Austin with ARI. Please go ahead.
Hi, Christine.
Hi, Donna. How are you?
Good, thanks. I have a couple of questions on some different topics, so if I can just roll through them, I guess, if you've got time. So the
sure.
First one is on the first one's on GAC advice. So given that the GAC communique seemed to indicate that they're okay with Category 1 and Category 2 planning from the NGPCs to how to deal with those, do you have any indication of what time frame it will be for those applicants to be able to move forward with the process now?
So, thank you, Donna. So, for Category 1, so we've gotten a couple questions in the chat, so let me try to address a couple of issues here. First of all applicants were solicited to provide a response to the Buenos Aires GAC communique. perhaps. We'd prefer, hope, not to receive 1,900 responses, but if we do receive them, we will compile them and share them with the NGPC for their consideration. At this point, we're anticipating that the NGPC needs to review those applicant responses, which are due in the 6th or 6th of January. We typically compile them, we publish them, we produce these massive PDFs that's shared with NGPC, generally with some type of summary and to them. So once they have an opportunity to review that, then you know they will need to determine the next action. So it's, again, you've heard me say it's difficult for staff to speak for what the board will do, but I think if history isn't in any indicator, they may write a letter to the GAC or they may direct staff to take action. That is what I would expect to see directing us to take action on Category 1 or Category 2, hopefully both advice, following their consideration of applicant responses.
So just to follow up on that, currently
sure.
There's no NGPC meeting scheduled for 2014. Actually, there's no board meeting. So do you have any idea of when the next NGPC meeting will be?
I'm getting a lot of those emails, actually. People asking me just that. I don't have it on my calendar, but I do believe that they're planning to meet. They're trying to schedule in early January. And their intention is they know they've got a lot on their plates, so I do understand that they're planning to meet fairly regularly during the next several months. That's my understanding.
Okay, thanks. The next question is in relation to the option rules, and it's quite specific. It refers to Section 8, Item E. So there's a phrase in there that says no pending ICANN accountability mechanisms, and I just want to understand what that means, because it's a very broad term, and it's not one that I've seen before, so I just wanted to understand what that was.
Thanks, Donna. I will hand that over to Russ.
Hi, Donna. This is Russ. Fair question here. But these are the three accountability mechanisms identified in the affirmation of commitments document. So there's the ombudsman is one of the mechanisms, a reconsideration request, or an independent review. So those are the three we're referring to. Does that answer your question?
So if you've filed a request under either of those three options, that means that you wouldn't be eligible to move forward through a contention set at that point?
Right. So if the application or one of the applications in a contention set is involved somehow in a reconsideration or independent review, that could be a reason for not moving the contention set forward because we may not have a clear direction on how to resolve it.
Okay. Thank you. Christine, I just have one more question. I've asked a couple more in the pod, but I think just one more question if I could. And this may be something that may not be able to answer, but it refers to the 2013 RAA, and the registrars had until, I think it was early January to 2014 to be compliant. And I'm just wondering, if there's a process that ICANN's undertaking with regard to that compliance element. But I think it's just important to understand where registrars are in that process.
So, Donna, I see your question. What you put in the chat, it says, registrars signing the 2013 RAA agreement had until January 2014 to be compliant. Can you explain what process is being undertaken to ensure registrar compliance with the 2013 RAA? I'm looking at the team. I don't have the registrar team or the compliance team here. Okay. Oh, Cyrus, thank you.
Hi, Donna. This is Cyrus Namazi. I'm not sure what you're asking for specifically, but just to, clarify that, there is nothing extra that we're doing in regards to the new sections of the RAA that come into enforcement for compliance as of next month. Our compliance team will follow the same standard format that we've always had. And essentially follow up with the registrars who've signed up to the new RAA to ensure compliance, but nothing beyond the ordinary. I hope this answers your question, but if not, please contact me offline.
Okay, thanks, Cyrus.
Thanks, Donna. That's the last question on the phone. Okay. So I think we still have maybe a dozen or so questions from the chat. If you give me a minute, we're going to coordinate how we're going to answer these, try to group them together. Give me just 1 minute. Thank you. Okay. Hello, everyone. So we've got a number of questions around the transition to delegation. Jeff Newman asks, of the 35-plus TLDs that have been delegated, what is the average time from the issuance of the token until actual delegation? As well, Jeff asks, what is the average timeline between passing the PDT and the actual delegation? Russ, do you have any general parameters, any information you can share?
Hey, Jeff. Sorry, I don't have real solid numbers for you right now, but I think it is tracking within about 2 weeks from the time we give a delegation token to the delegation date. I think it's moving faster than that, probably closer to a week. And from the time someone completes PDT to when they're delegated is shortening up quite a bit now that all the alternate paths delegation reports were published in Buenos Aires and the onboarding team is fully engaged and working really quickly. So those are going... those aren't driving forces now into the eligibility. Those are resolved prior to PDT results completing in most cases. So it's shortening up to about a week before you get a token from coming out of PDT.
Thanks, Russ. I think I see one more question on the transition to delegation from Brett Fawcett. The number of days from notification of passing PDT to receiving an IANA token seems to have increased over the last 2 months. Are you tracking the increases in time and taking steps to keep the pace toward delegation?
This is Russ again. Brett, yeah, this is probably related to what I just covered. In November, we were a little bit slower in processing these due to getting the alternate path to delegation reports completed and getting caught up on onboarding a little bit. But since then, I think you'll see a pretty quick cycle time.
Okay, we've got a couple of questions on name collision. Donna Austin asks, can you please provide more specific detail on the outreach campaign to raise awareness, i.e., who are the targets, what communications medium are you using, how global is the outreach? And then a second question from Jim Prendergast, could Francisco talk to any other steps ICANN is taking beyond posting a guide to the ICANN website that are part of an outreach campaign?
So thank you. This is Cyrus Namazi again. I'll take a stab at this. The additional efforts since we posted the comprehensive guide to mitigation and other collateral and putting in place the web portal for all name collision resources is really been focused on extending the outreach and trying to amplify that as much as we can. To that end, we've actually engaged a third-party public relations firm that is exclusively focused on getting the message out to various media publications around the world, selective target outreach campaign to them. The coverage has been actually quite impressive. I don't have the exact figures in my hand right now, but we will share that with you as soon as it comes in. We've also trained our own regional staff to ensure that they also continue to communicate the message out to the constituents around the world, and we actually ask the community to help us get the message out as well, because this is really a community effort, not ICANN alone. So to that end, anyone and any entity who has the ability to get the word out or has suggestions for us to improve the outreach campaign, let us know. But collectively right now, the focus is on amplifying the outreach campaign. Thank you.
Excellent. Thanks so much, Cyrus. There are a couple of questions that were submitted around objections in the ICC. I just want to acknowledge the question. So John Stile submitted a comment and a question regarding the results that only a third of the objection determinations have been received, and expressing frustration about the extension and the timeline there. So, John, we certainly understand your concern, and hopefully that my comments to Christina were understandable, and there's a lot of different circumstances there. Also received a question from Staten Hammock regarding objections in ICC. He says in BA, ICANN reported the ICC would deliver all objection decisions before the end of the year. Now ICANN's reporting end of January. So, again, I believe we addressed both of those questions during the previous responses, but I wanted to acknowledge those. So thank you, John, and thank you, Staten. now, if I may, I think we have a couple of TMCH questions. The first, Jim Prendergast asks, can you explain the process that was followed whereby the TMCH providers conferred with ICANN about their announcement that, oh, TMCH, we already have, sorry, Chuck Gomes asked that question about the trademark claims being available on an extended basis as an ancillary service. So I think we addressed that one. Sorry, I'm going through here. Do you want to talk about a launch program? Okay. Bear with me. Dana Moe asks, could you please distinguish what types slash categories of launch programs are available and to which section of the RA a program relates?
Yes. Hello, Dana. This is Karen Luntz. So at the current time, the registry agreement incorporates a set of requirements around Sunrise and trademark claims and any limited registration periods that a registry may be offering in its startup, and it provides some parameters around those. The RPM requirements do also provide that a registry may apply to offer a different launch program, which wouldn't otherwise be permitted under the requirements. So there's no established approved launch program that exists currently. There is a process to request those. There are a couple of placeholders in the event that programs are developed, one of those being an approved launch program relating to geographic TLDs, and the placeholder is such that if stakeholders work together to propose something that and that is acceptable, that would be incorporated as a form of approved launch program that's available to those who qualify. And then there's also a provision for a potential what's called qualified launch program relating to potential use of a limited number of names prior to the Sunrise. But I'll emphasize that neither of those exist currently. What exists currently is the process for requesting registry-specific launch programs. As I mentioned in the slides, there are some requests in process currently, but none have yet been approved.
Thanks, Karen. A couple of questions on TLD startup information that's displayed on the microsite. Connie from IP Mirror asks, start and end dates of trademark claims are listed clearly on the new GTLD microsite, but it seems like the start dates of some Sunrise dates occur after limited registration periods. Please clarify this.
Hello, Connie. Thank you. So there should not be a Sunrise that occurs after a limited registration period. They may overlap subject to some requirements included into the agreement. But what has raised some questions, and maybe I can clarify this as well, is what is meant by the claims period. So as I mentioned in the slides, if there is a limited registration period, which a registry has the option to do one or more of those, the claims service must be offered during those periods. That's in addition to the required 90-day claims period that is that must take place for all TLDs. So some people have been confused by thinking, for example, that the registry is not offering the claim service like it's supposed to during the limited registration period because the dates are of the required period. So there's always a 90-day required claims period, which we ask for it and publish those dates. There may be a limited registration period taking place. It's not notated on the page as part of the claims period, but the claims service is required to be offered during that phase, and we have gotten questions on that, so we're looking at, you know, ways that we can potentially make that clearer on the webpage. Thanks.
Thanks, Karen. Let's see, we've got a couple questions around registry services. So I think we're, let me try to address these. Yasmin Omer, Dat Shebeka, submitted the question, can a registry operator who has already executed a registry agreement transition to Specification 13, if eligible, where Specification 13 is approved and implemented by the NGPC?
Yasmin, this is Cyrus again. The short answer is yes. When and if there is a Specification 13 and a category of DOT brands is defined and adopted, and an applicant who has already signed the base agreement qualifies under that definition, then yes, you can actually adopt the Specification 13 to be amended to your base agreement.
Thanks so much, Cyrus. Another registry services question, Chris Niemi, I apologize. Are registry operators allowed to allocate one and two character domain names, provided the two character domain names are not ccTLDs? I think that might be even a technical services question. One moment there.
Hello, this is Francisco. I think the answer to regarding two character names is in Specification 5. There are certain restrictions on the two character names. I believe all of them are initially withheld, but there are certain conditions that there are certain measures that the registry can apply to get out of that reservation. In regards to one character names, there are no provisions in the registry agreement regarding that. So I believe by default that would mean they are allowed. Thank you.
Thanks, Francisco. Dana Moe had one, I think, follow-up question on TLD startup information. She asks, on startup information, can you add supported languages for the registry? For example, Dutch Shebeka only accepts Arabic, but that everyone in Japanese might accept English and Japanese.
Hi, Dana. Thanks for the suggestion. We do collect from all of the registries as part of the TLD startup information their complete Sunrise policy. So, for example, if your registry has restrictions regarding what scripts are allowed or what characters are allowed, that those should be reflected in there. We do have some capacity that we're working on to be able to sort the various documents of Sunrise Info according to, say, if you're looking for something that has language restrictions or qualifications. So that's something that's being considered. Thanks.
Thanks, Karen. I think I've got a couple more questions here. Let me just address downloading the slides. Are they done now? So the slides are available for download via Adobe. There's at the bottom of the Adobe window. Oh, there it is. Yes. You can click on that and download it. There, and I think we have a caller on the phone, so we'll go to the caller on the phone. Operator, do we have a caller?
We have a question from the line of Yasmin Onar. Please go ahead. What's Shadeka? Please go ahead.
Hi, Christine. I think you answered one of my questions regarding Specification 13. The only other question I had was in relation to ICANN or Deloitte possibly reporting on how many SMBs have been issued.
Yasmin, was the question how many SMDs have been issued?
Yes, I was wondering if you could, either ICANN or Deloitte could report on that. Yes.
Yasmin, I'm afraid we don't have that information at the moment, so let me get that information. We can publish that after the webinar.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Thank you. I have another question from Mayor Brown, LLP. Someone there. Why was an invitation to respond to the BA GAC advice sent to all applicants as opposed to only those mentioned in the advice complete? Please confirm that no response is required. So we had some conversation about this. As the Buenos Aires GAC advice mentions IGO protection, which would be relevant to all registry operators, it was determined that potentially some applicants might choose to respond regarding that topic. If you don't have any information or feedback for the NGPC, you're not obligated to submit a response about the Buenos Aires GAC advice. Thank you. There. And then, have we gotten any more questions? No. Nope. Jeff Newman, I will let Jeff be the final question here. Can you please release a comprehensive schedule of when every activity occurs by day of the week? It's great you have the schedule. We've tried to be as clear about what happens on what days of the week. I think we've shared a lot of information around contracting. Everybody knows with predictability about evaluation results coming out on Fridays. We could probably share a little more around pre-delegation testing, the transition to delegation, et cetera. I will just say that we are continuing to look at all of the processes to make them more efficient and reduce the overall extended timeline for any application through the process. So I think that's all. I think we have one follow-up question on the number of SMDs for Yasmin. So hopefully we've been successful in addressing your questions. Thank you all to the applicants who participated. Thanks to the team here. Oh, we have late-breaking questions? Okay. We have 12 minutes by my clock, so happy to take a couple more.
There are a couple last-minute questions in the pod. The first one is from Jim Prendergast. So for clarification on the Trademark Clearinghouse new offering, please confirm that there are no steps necessary from a registrar already or registry related to that new product, no passing of registration data back and forth.
Hi, Jim. This is Karen Lenton. That's correct.
I think this question is for you, Christine, from Brett Fawcett. What is the ICANN schedule over the year and holidays, and will timelines change at all?
So ICANN does observe, as in years past, ICANN has a holiday schedule and observes a shutdown between the 25th of December through the new year. However, all critical functions are continuing to operate. So SLA monitoring, the IANA functions, Trademark Clearinghouse, providers is still operational, RRI, the name collision response function, eBro, et cetera. So we have a variety of critical operational functions that continue to operate even during the shutdown. Some of the other program functions, like contracting and PDT, require a coordination of resources throughout the week and a cycle across multiple weeks. So I don't expect that those cycles will, as you've seen, don't anticipate sending out contracts next week. Or potentially the week after, but we are sending out registry agreements today. So We are sending out registry agreements today that will be the last batch for this year, and then we will pick up again the week of January 6th with those other program functions. Thank you very much. Okay, one more?
Yes, there's one more question in the pod from Andrew Merriam. Releasing further information and stats around the onboarding process, comment, what would be great to know is what would trigger operational capacity, what is the capacity, then we can all plan accordingly. Yes, so Andrew, I think what you're probably talking about is pre-delegation testing and the transition to delegation process and probably not registry onboarding. And thank you. We'll, Russ is nodding his head, so we'll take that into consideration. Thank you.
Thank you all. Thanks to everyone who participated in the webinar. Hopefully this was informative. For those of you who are observing upcoming holidays, enjoy. And we will speak to you again in January. Thanks so much.
Ladies and gentlemen, this concludes the applicant update webinar. We thank you for your participation, and at this time you may now disconnect.